This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Explore the mind of a stripper.
And you can find the time to spend with your actual family.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk.
Damn! What they on? All steroids and no carbs? Them some thick-ass kids.
This is Prime Time.
We're not like you. We're grown-ups.
Your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Oh, my goodness.
Here are Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanik with Prime Time on 1080 The Fan.
What it do?
Ahoy.
What is up?
Bro.
How's everybody doing?
I'm doing good.
Have a good weekend?
If only there was something to talk about.
Yeah.
Kind of a slow day.
There are a few topics today.
Well, he did it.
Who?
Chris Davis.
Enes Kanter.
He did it.
Jon Snow.
Oh. What? Wait. What? Who?
Who would have thought the most disappointing part of the weekend was going to be Game of Thrones?
Is this on?
Dad?
What? What happened?
Wait, Game of Thrones. What did you say about Game of Thrones?
The most disappointing part of the weekend was Game of Thrones.
What do you mean?
If you would have put the odds on.
People are really pissed off that nothing crazy happened.
I'm not saying that it was bad.
Impossible to please.
Exactly. So look, I'm not trying to crap on it. All I'm saying is the stuff that happened this weekend, right?
Let's rank them.
Rank it.
Power rank.
Tiger 1.
No question.
Blazers 2. I'm saying just general playoffs 3.
Oh.
And then I'm going Game of Thrones.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys were disappointed by Game of Thrones?
I'm disappointed they eased us back into it like an old man sliding into a bath. And that's fine.
Did you expect anything else?
I did. I thought that it's like an awesome mixtape, right? You got to grab me right from the get-go. I thought you'd come in, give me something, and then ease it back down and then get ready for the next episode.
I'm not sure at this point anyone needs to be grabbed. If you're watching,
I wanted to be grabbed.
If you're watching season 8.
I wanted to be felt up. I was ready for second base. I didn't even get a peck on the cheek. I was dressed slutty. I was putting out the vibe. Nothing.
The anticipation is going to get you even more, though, when we get a couple episodes down the road.
And I don't know about anyone else, but at the beginning, when they tell you what's coming up, like the content, when you give me nudity and strong sexual content, now I'm like, all right. And you give me Bronn of the Blackwater and that. No, no. I demand more than that.
There was a guy having a foursome.
It lasted like all of like 3 seconds, and it was a character I didn't really care.
You are a son of a bitch.
I wanted more.
That is such classic suit coming in griping today about that.
I wanted more.
I thought it was great.
I wanted more. You really think it was exactly
it
right?
It wasn't
there.
Great.
It was a good episode.
It was good. It was, you know what it was? It was a good little episode. And they're setting the table, man.
Yes.
They came right in and set the table. There's only 6 episodes in the whole season.
I thought is there 7 or only 6?
6.
Okay.
Six. So 5 left.
Which is why I'm not saying that it was bad. All I'm saying, if of the stuff on the weekend that lived up or didn't live up to expectations, Tiger at the Masters, way better than you expected. Blazers game 1, everything I could ask for and then some. First round of the playoffs so far, we've got some intrigue. Right? Stuff happening in Toronto. Kyle Lowry can't score.
My Magic one.
Your Orlando Magic. The NHL playoffs have been good. And then it was Game of Thrones. And while it was good, I was excited for it. It didn't give me everything that sports gave me this weekend. Thus, on the power rankings, it comes in last.
Sports wins.
Yeah, sports
wins. You know what wins?
Won.
Golf wins.
Yes.
Freaking golf wins.
21% of all televisions that we're watching in the morning in the United States of America, Tiger Woods.
21%?
21% of all TVs that were turned on.
Now, I guess that's good.
That's good.
Because they changed the start times.
Yeah.
And so that, I thought that would mean that today we'd be talking about television ratings that were not quite as good. As a matter of fact, the overnight rating was only like a 7.7, and they said that was down from last year, but that can be attributed to the fact that due to weather, they moved the tea times up. So how many people got fooled by that? How many people, like casual golf viewers or, you know, Masters Sunday is a big deal.
Sure.
So people will be checking in with that. How many people didn't know that it started at 6 o'clock? Not even that. It started at 4:30 Pacific time, our time, and the television coverage started at 6.
Six.
How many people got fooled by that? And how many people who watched it, because they played it at its regular time, they replayed it at noon.
Yeah.
In the afternoon, how many people were watching that going, oh, and thinking it's live?
I think you probably had a handful of people that got caught up into that. I think if you were, then you're talking about the casual. If you were a sports fan, you were aware of what was going on. But still, I didn't wake up at 6 to watch it. In fact, I went and played golf that morning, and we left the course to go watch as Tiger made the push. I started watching right as he made the turn.
Did you go to Sassy's?
No, I did not go to Sassy's. We just went to the clubhouse. And then everyone was piled
up. Oh, you mean you walked off the course to go watch what Tiger was doing?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The course. I thought you meant like you got done playing and then.
No, the course emptied, man. People were bailing.
Amazing.
People were bailing left and right. It was kind of cool because then you ended up with like a Super Bowl kind of experience, and people are gambling. I saw some serious money being won and lost in the clubhouse there. There were a lot of people with some cheese on that. But yeah, the course cleared out. Everyone wanted to go in, and so it was kind of cool to kind of sit there and watch that unfold. And it was amazing. I'm not even a Tiger Woods guy, and that was amazing.
Well, I am. And my sports pants overfloweth.
Believe me. Like Dirt was crying. Like, he was in tears.
He did?
Yeah, he broke down.
You know, I did well up, but I will say I didn't cry. And I think I've been thinking about this. And the reason I didn't cry, because I believe that, well, not only, okay.
Look.
Well, we've got, okay, we have 16 segments in one show.
Yeah.
I could do 38 segments on Tiger Woods.
Seems like a lot.
Probably overkill. Now, you and I have already talked about it. Mm-hmm. We rarely talk about the broadcast.
No.
If ever. But we are going to do a Blazers segment first. That will be next segment. So technically second, but really first, if you know us.
Yeah, because this segment doesn't really...
Yeah, no one cares about this segment.
It's just, it's like the Game of Thrones episode. We set the table for everything else.
So we're going to start with Blazers 3:15, and then we're going to get into some Tiger Woods. But just to set the table for that, Tiger Woods, and you know me, I'm a Tiger Woods P1. I am a Tiger Woods homer.
Yes, I knew that your pants would be bursting at the seams when he started to make his push.
Oh, they burst. And so Tiger, I didn't think he was going to win even Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, people are saying, hey, who's going to win? They're asking you. I'm like, Molinari looks like he's just absolutely in control. And Tiger's, you know, he's great, but I mean, come on. And the stars aligned. Like, that was one of the coolest, seriously, one of the coolest sports moments that you'll ever see, ever. Because not only was it the greatest golf tournament ever, in a sense that it's, I mean, I don't know what more you want. It's Masters Sunday, right? It's on the golf course that is golf. It's on the last round of the tournament that is golf. And it's freaking Superman there, Tiger, after everything that he's been through. And we'll get into this, but all the context of his life and what has happened with him and how long it's been since he's won and just his greatness. And then you get down to the Masters doesn't start until the back nine on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And that is so true because Molinari was in complete control and then he throws two doubles on the board, which is exactly why they say the Masters doesn't start until the back nine on Sunday.
If I would have told you it when he was at number seven,
no
that
chance.
He was going to put two
no.
in the drink.
No.
Two?
No. Nope, nope. I would have told you, I would have
he's
said,
a robot.
I would have said Molinari's going to win. He's just not making mistakes.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just so good. Now, so that's the Masters. That's the beauty of that tournament, that golf course. Well, anyway, you get to the back nine, and it starts on 12, really. But four of the five guys around Tiger, because they were playing threesomes to speed everything up. So they all double bogeyed. Every one of them double bogeyed.
Yeah.
With the exception of Tiger, who parred it. He just parred. And from that point on, that could not have finished any better because the intrigue was so good. That's where I think he took the lead, but I'm not quite sure. And, or maybe he just tied for the lead. But the rest of the course, we all know the course really well, so that makes it fun. But then all the other, like you know, Patrick Cantlay and all these other guys, it's like, get out of there.
And they did.
They did.
They were like,
you know what?
We'll just go ahead and bow out.
It was perfect. And then here come the hard chargers like Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler. And like, That was perfect. And then the crescendo of it all is not even that Tiger won, although it is, of course. The other crescendo, if you can have multiple crescendos,
Is that allowed?
I don't know if that's even allowed.
Can you?
But we're going to do it in this.
Can you double stamp? Can that happen?
Look. The other crescendo is that on 16, as Tiger had a one-shot lead with two holes to play, he damn near aced it.
Yeah.
And as that ball was rolling toward the hole, I mean, you could not have asked for better drama, for a better finish to a better tournament with a better story ever. I mean, you really couldn't. Like, yeah. You can't script it that way. And so then he finally gets to 18, savvy little bogey. That's what they say about me when I play.
I was kind of hoping that the par putt was going to go in. You know, that would have added some drama because then he wouldn't have had to stood around and wait. But
well, he made a bogey, yeah. and then when he made the short one, and it's over. The reason I didn't cry, to get back to that, was that I thought that Tiger was the one who kind of set the tone for the moment, of course. And we're all eyes are on him. And he's like really celebratory, like fist pumping, like hands in the air, like, yeah. Now, if he would have broke down, like, you know, when Jason Day, I remember when he won, and Bubba Watson, when he won, Jason Day didn't win the Masters, but when he won a major.
Yeah.
And then when Bubba won the Masters, you know, they immediately just broke down into tears. That'll get you every time, yeah. Right? Tiger didn't do that. And I think that if he did, if he would have been more emotional in terms of like.
Could have gotten you?
Could have. I was ripe. He could have had me, but he didn't. He was more like, that was more like fist pumping. Oh my God, this is amazing type of moment, yeah. Because he set that tone as opposed to ball your eyes out type moment. Although I did well up when he hugged his kids.
The kiddos. And yeah, because
that was cool.
His son was there and he grabbed his son. His daughter is old. I was kind of blew me away. I was like, God, his kids are old.
Well, he's old. He's yeah, 43, man.
The sun hug, both wearing the red and the black. That was a cool moment. Like I said, I'm not my sports pants don't runneth over for Tiger Woods the way that a lot of people like yours do. But that was an unbelievable moment. It was amazing to watch. It transcended sports. It became a cultural moment. Like, you were getting like news updates. It was like the lead story on CNN and like MSN.com. Like that was bigger than sports. And to the moment where he was hugging his kids and his mom, and then they showed the side by side, the first one in 97 with his dad, and then this one, 20 plus years later, hugging his kid. That was cool.
Dude.
And if you can't get behind that, you've got a Mr. Burns like Grinch heart. Like, I get that a lot of people think that the Tiger stuff is overblown because a lot of that stuff is self-inflicted and all that. And I understand that not everyone's gonna view this as the ultimate redemption story. But if you didn't like that, if you couldn't appreciate that, you're just a curmudgeon and you're hating for the sake of hating.
Yeah, I believe that you are soulless at that point.
Yeah.
Either that or just overly stubborn, like to a fault.
Sure.
And I totally agree with you on that. I just thought that once he won, he tapped in, and then he threw his putter at his bag, which I thought was great. And then that 5 minutes, Jim Nantz and Nick Faldo laid out. They didn't say a word.
Nope.
And we all just sat there and watched. I thought that particularly was as good as it gets in sports, where so much that meant so much. And everybody, like you said, you know, not everybody's going to love him, but it's hard not to love that story. And then to see him celebrating, and then everybody going, you know, chanting Tiger, and then his family, and then him walking through the line all the way down to like, it's like professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Like all the way down to sign his scorecard. I mean, that 5 minutes, dude, that was so bone-chillingly good, yeah. Because everybody knew what it meant. And, I mean, it's going to be hard to top that in sports. It's just, you know, we all love sports. We all collect here on 1080 The Fan to talk sports, and we love it. And that right there yesterday was one of the main reasons why I love sports. One is to watch greatness be great, and that's him. Like, I never was concerned with Barry Bonds being an ass. I don't care. When I watch Barry Bonds play, my jaw was on the floor when he hit. And that's why we watch sports. I love to watch guys do things that I couldn't dream of doing. That's part of it for me. And so that yesterday was that plus on top of that. And we'll get into this later. We'll push this off because there's a lot to chew on. But his life story, And I think just this the sense that, you know, he feels like a better person now. He feels like he's more honest now. He feels more open now. He feels more contrite.
Well, I think anytime you get torn down,
I think
down,
we can relate to that. Yeah, I think as yeah. humans, we all go through life, and you know, you lost your wife, or you know, people have life hits them, and life hit him, and so yes, some of the things in there were nefarious, but at the same time, if you zoom out and just say, man, life hit that guy hard. I mean, drug problem, mugshot, divorce, serious injury. I mean, what else could have happened to him? And here he is back, not only playing, but winning. I just don't know how you can't get behind that. And that is another reason why I just love sports. And it was all encapsulated right there on TV on Sunday. And it was fantastic.
When you get torn down, it makes you more human. Like you said, what did you say? More relatable, right? Because who can relate to the greatest golfer of all time, or at least the greatest golfer of,
or even his troubles
of history? Yeah, it's very hard. But when you get torn down and you get exposed that way, for all the flaws, all the pimples, all the warts, I do think you become more human. And there's a lot of sports moments in your life that kind of fade, even though they're big. Like what you mentioned, Barry Bonds. Bonds is as good as anyone I ever saw do anything. But do you remember Bonds 756, 757?
I don't either.
Like those things kind of fade from my memory. There's very few Super Bowls.
I just remember watching him hit.
Yeah, the Montana, Cincinnati Super Bowl sticks in my mind. But for the most part,
McGuire,
yeah, Sosa. A lot of even in their big events kind of fade from your memory. But like Tyson being knocked out by Buster Douglas, that one sticks out in my mind.
Yeah, we didn't see that though.
Yeah, I saw it.
You did? You were watching that?
I was watching it.
I thought that was like...
No, it was pay-per-view, Tokyo, Japan.
Oh, it was pay-per-view.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
No, I was watching that. My dad had the illegal cable box.
Oh, sweet.
Where we got the little thing at the bottom saying that this is illegally being watched. And we were like, we'll be fine. There's a handful of events that that don't fade from my memory. I think this will be one of them.
It should.
And like I said, even not being a Tiger Woods guy, I don't think that 10 years from now you'll ask me about that and I'll be like, I kind of remember it. I feel like that one will stand the test of time. And that says something when it goes from being a sporting event to being a cultural event. And I feel like this was a cultural event.
Well, and that's what he's been this whole time. Like he's just been, we needed the last chapter of that story. And that may not have been the last chapter, but holy hell, if it is, that's a great last chapter.
Damn right. If he never wins another one, that story is complete.
Yeah. And we needed that. And that's what was amazing about it. All right. We have so much Tiger. So much Tiger. We're going to talk about gum Tiger. We're going to talk about Tiger's hair.
Yeah. Because we do need to discuss that.
We're going to talk about his girlfriend. Because she has now entered the fray now that, I mean, she's been around, but nobody really knows who she is.
Trying a little too hard, in my opinion, to get on camera.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Kind of like Koepka's girl?
Felt just a step back, all right? Not your moment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Upstaging.
Yeah. There's a Perkins waitress waiting to be next.
See, I think Perkins waitresses all over the South are putting on a little extra lipstick today.
Getting a little glammed up.
I think so. All right, so we've got plenty of Tiger coming up, but we're next going to turn our attention to the Blazers' Game 1 victory over the Thunder. When we return, it's 318 on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 16 segments in a Monday show. 13 of them will be on Tiger, but if I have anything to do with it,
wow,
which I kind of do, but this is the first of probably more than one Blazer segment.
I would think so. I think a lot of demons were exercised at the Moda Center. That was a big win. Obviously, game one in any series is huge. What do they say? It's like 70-something%. It's like 76% of game one winners go on and win the series.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
I sometimes don't like those stats.
Well, I mean,
it's kind of like the probability stats, like, Blazers were up 19. Their probability, or Oklahoma City was down 19. The probability of them winning is whatever percent. Well, yeah, it is. But at the same time, it's not like teams haven't erased 19-point deficits, which they almost did.
No, but
I don't know.
But at the same time, there's a reason why right? When you win that game, you stand a much better chance of winning the series. And look, I'm saying you had lost 10 in a row. You've been swept out of the playoffs. You got swept out of the playoffs? How did that happen?
They swept him out.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
You've been swept 2 years in a row. Last year was probably the most embarrassing one. All the questions around Nurkic. There was a heated series in the regular season where you got swept by Oklahoma City. That was a big one, especially with the last time we remember Portland in the postseason was Lillard and CJ being flummoxed by New Orleans. And to come out and get that one, especially the way you played and the way you played early and with Cantor having a huge game, I think that went a long way for not just the confidence of a fan base, but I think the confidence of the Blazers.
Yeah, it was an important win.
They weren't going to win that series dropping game one. I don't know if they win it now.
I was going to say, I don't know if they win it now.
I don't know, but here's the thing. I do not think they were going to win that series if they lost game one, and I think
you
they
don't
give them
think,
a chance.
Well, wait a minute. You're saying that just generally, or are you saying that based on how game one went? Because I would say, based on how game one went, if they had blown that game, they were up 19.
Yeah.
Paul George had nothing. Oklahoma City went 5 of 33 from 3. You blow that on your home court, you're dead.
Yes.
Dead. They could not blow that game. Based on how game one played out, when it was 93-92 and you're gripping a little bit, it was like, oh my God. I just was sitting there thinking, oh dude, they cannot blow this. They have any chance at all to win the series, they got to win. And they did. And they made the plays and they won the game. Well, go ahead if you've got something over there.
I was looking to, as far as like win probability goes, when you have home court in game one of a series in the NBA and you win game one, your chances of winning that series go up by almost 19%. Just off of that one win.
Yeah, I mean, and like in Vegas, they're now favored to win the series because they're up 1-0. It's just like, I don't know. These series are long and they have ebbs and flows, and look, in the playoffs, a win is a win, period. You take it, and you move on to game two. I thought the best part of that game was, at least for a game, the Blazers' best players outplayed the Thunder's best players.
Yeah.
And that's what it takes. I mean, all this talk about, you know, Seth Curry or Zach Collins or the bench depth, it doesn't matter. They contribute, of course. Maurice Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu were key guys out there, but it is always in the playoffs about the best players. And the Blazers stars were better than Oklahoma City stars.
Exactly. Cantor, Lillard, McCollum, than Adams, Westbrook, and George.
That's exactly right. And if you look, sometimes the NBA, you can just look at the box score. It'll tell you everything you need to know. That was one of those games. Look at the box score. It tells you everything you need to know. Oklahoma City couldn't shoot, period. So, and CJ played well. Dame played well. And Cantor played great. Yeah. So there you go. There is the game. And you can see that all right in the box score. So that was about three players, Lillard, McCollum, and Cantor. Now, who thinks that will continue? I guess that's the million-dollar question. If you think that can continue, they will win the series. If you think that that's a one-off, buckle up, because Oklahoma City, I mean, Paul George is capable of absolutely taking over the series, but maybe you caught a break here. Maybe he won't get right in time. I mean, he was not good.
No, and that's my thing. First off, Oklahoma City shot 5 of 33 from behind the arc, and a couple of those came late when, I'm not going to say the game was completely salted away, but for 98% of that game, they were shooting 11% from behind the arc.
It's crazy.
That's not going to happen
again.
And
some of those were open look. I mean, they even said, hey, we liked our looks.
Yeah. So this series is going to be a hard-fought series. I think, to me, what gives me hope if I'm a Blazer fan, Paul George is nowhere near being healthy. And he could say all he wants that his shoulders aren't bothering him today, and he came out and said there's no residual pain. Horse crap. Dusty had a great tweet. He goes, my shoulders hurt watching Paul George try to shoot. And he there, that's a poor shooting team from an overall standpoint anyways. And if Paul George wants to take 15 threes with two bum shoulders, be my guest. If that's the Paul George you see, I think Portland can win this series. I think Portland will win this series if Paul George is like that. And when your shoulders are that bad to the point, he said he hadn't picked up a basketball since the Rockets game. He said that he couldn't lift his shoulders above his head after the Rockets game. I don't think that that's magically going to get better as the series goes on. I thought Portland did a great job of making him work, putting him on the floor, making him run through screens. And I don't think he's going to get better. And I don't think they can win without a seven-game series without a better Paul George than what we saw. So I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic right now if I'm the Blazers.
Text the Better You Today text line 55305. Where do you stand on this series after game one? And we'll get to some of those. And we'll talk about the Blazers defense next. But first, Mike with SportsCenter.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Masters Sunday was epic, and we'll discuss that in our next segment. But we are right now talking about your Zers, who won.
I think it's really sexy.
Well, I think you pencil them through to the Western Conference Finals. I mean,
stop breaking news, dude.
Roll them right through. Come on.
Guys, they can beat the Spurs or Nuggets. Come on. Did you watch that game?
The series is over. They got a different energy. Come on. They've got confidence.
I'm sensing a lot of that on the Better You Today text line.
I know.
People are fired up.
There were a lot.
And rightly so.
There were a lot of Blazer fans that are going to take this and run with it.
Hey, man. They won the game.
Yep.
The streak is over. That was important. The important thing about this, that was such a big win because the streak is over and you apply a little pressure to them. You didn't play your best, but you won. And they needed that. They needed that right out of the damn gate. Like, I thought Lillard came out and hit a 30-footer.
Well, they hit, like, what, six of their first seven threes?
So when he shot that, well, when he made that, I thought, wow, he wanted to do that. Like, that's a statement. And then in the fourth quarter, he did that again twice.
Yeah. Well, once the lead had been cut to one, and you were like,
well, that was the second time.
Yeah, and you were like, oh my God, here it comes. And he stepped up, and George, or I don't remember if it was George or Westbrook. I think it was Westbrook.
It was George.
I guess he didn't want to defend him that far.
No, that was Westbrook.
I think it was Westbrook.
The second one or the first?
The second one.
Westbrook just stood off of him.
He just stood off him, and he was out there 29, 30 feet, and Dame drilled one, and it went from 1-4, and it was never the same after that.
That was when it was 93-92.
Yeah.
With 2.5 minutes left. And the impact of that shot cannot be overstated.
Yeah.
That was so huge. And so he did that to open the game. He did that with about 8 minutes left. He knocked one in. And then he did it again with 2.5 minutes. And I sat there and I thought to myself, man, it may just be this guy's time. I think this guy, you know, he is a bona fide star.
Yeah.
And he has taken his playoff lumps. And I think all of that has made him better. And I do sort of feel like he was shooting shots that he probably, I think those were messages, at least to in my little pea brain, those were messages that, hey, I'm gonna do this. Like, I believe in my guys. I believe in who's around me. But I'm the star of this team. I have to do this. And those shots, particularly where in the game he made them, I thought those were messages that, you know, there's going to be an element of this series where I'm just going to need you guys to jump on my back. And he hasn't had that moment in the playoffs, right? I mean, he hit that one big shot.
Houston.
In the Houston series, but LaMarcus Aldridge is really the star of that series. So it may just be his time, you know? I mean, it was as if he said, more of me. It was as if he said, I need to do this. It is my time. It is my team.
Stars win in the postseason, and the best two players on the floor were both Blazers. Lillard and Cantor were the two best players in that series.
McCollum was good, too.
He was. But, you know, when you talk about stars winning— You know, going into this, you'd say that overall Lillard was probably either the second or third best, right? The debate, I mean, Westbrook's won an MVP. It's a better resume, but I think especially this year, a lot of people think that Lillard may be slightly better. But Paul George was the best player in the series, and then maybe Westbrook, then maybe you get to Lillard. And you can't say that after game one. You know, we'll see how the rest of the series goes. But that was a star taking over and doing star things. And then Cantor at the end.
Those offensive rebounds, man.
They're just, well, wait a minute. They're enormous.
We'll get to Cantor. Let's stick on Lillard and finish this up because you're right. And the thing about him is I feel like Oklahoma City looked at those shots and went, we'll live with those, right? Like, they're 30 feet out.
Yeah.
But I also feel like he just sent him a message that said, you better get your ass out here and guard me because I'm freaking the next best thing to Steph Curry from this range. I'm deadly. And I thought it was so important that he hit those shots, because especially at the times he did, because I just think Oklahoma City now is like, well, you know, we'll live with those. Well, can we really live with those shots? Now they run guys at him.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see. They'll double him more in game two. He better be ready. And he is. He's been through this before. They're going to throw more at him in game two. Well, then they come all the way out there. He's like, see ya. I'll dribble right by you. Or you trap me. You double me. I have faith in my guys. And that's where the inside presence of Cantor comes in. Nurk, more importantly, but of course he's not there anymore. But Cantor offensively is just a load.
Yeah.
And his play with 12 seconds left, the two-step left
run,
was just
and at first
that was a huge play.
That looked like a travel until you watched the replay.
I was watching. I was like, oh my God, he got away with one. And then you watch it and you're like, no,
Like he took seven steps.
By the way,
you're like, oh my God.
On a kind of related note, I don't mean to change the subject, but did you see Antetokounmpo's dunk where he took one step from beyond half court and threw it down? Speaking of the,
I saw nothing of the Bucks game.
I saw him dunk from the free throw line.
I assume they won.
They won. But
the Pistons are bad.
The Cantor thing was crazy because it looked like he traveled those big steps. Just YouTube for the sake of argument. We'll move on from it. But YouTube it. He dribbles once on the other side of the wrong side of half court, and in one dribble and then two steps he dunks. It's one of the most amazing things I've seen. I think Bill Simmons tweeted out, it's ridiculous. That being said, that yes, the Cantor play with the 12 seconds left was huge, but so were the two offensive rebounds.
Yep.
That guy, 20 and 18, seven offensive rebounds. They do not win the game without Cantor playing that way. The only scary part is, can you ask the question? Even with that, it still came down to the very end. Can Cantor do that more than once or twice in the series?
But you could also counter that and say, as well as Lillard and CJ played, they did not have their best shooting night either. CJ was really inefficient for his point. So if he is a little bit better shooting the ball, then you don't need exactly as much from Cantor.
They're not going to be perfect. I mean, I thought that the Oklahoma City defense really cranked up after the first quarter, and they're a good defensive team. Mm-hmm. So it's never going to be. I mean, they're not going to shoot 55% every night. I think that Oklahoma City after the first quarter really defended them well, and yet they still got what they needed to do to win the game. And again, that's stars. That's the best players doing what they need to do to win. And Lillard, McCollum, and Cantor all did that better than Paul George, Russell Westbrook, and Steven Adams. The question is, can that continue? And I don't know. I mean, this is what I said last week. I said I thought the Blazers would win game one, and then I think Oklahoma City might suffocate them from there. And I still think there were things in that game where I look back and I go, oh boy, you know, if Oklahoma City can keep their head screwed on right, this is going to be really tough because their defense really is that good. So we'll see, you know, there's going to be, like I said, there's going to be ebbs and flows. Oklahoma City will adjust. They will throw some things that are different at the Blazers and we'll see how they do. It's just that was encouraging because, well, one, Paul George is really banged up, and that is a real thing, like you point out. And it's like, man, maybe they just getting freaking lucky again. And it's like, hey,
I thought Portland had a couple big defensive stops too, where they played great defense and forced Oklahoma City into some bad turnovers. And it was weird. I thought Oklahoma City was really tentative at times, overpassing when they had looks at the rim, and then just were awful. But it's not a good 3-point shooting team, but they're not going to shoot 11%. So it will
exactly see that okay, let's stop on that. And then I do want to get to some texts. A lot of people texting in. I'm going to get to some of those, but let's stop right there. How much of Oklahoma City going 5 of 33 from three was the Blazers defense? Because I don't think it was that much. I mean, I think the Blazers defense, I've been saying this all year about the Blazers defense, their defense is active, but it is not great. And that was evident in that game. I thought that the Blazers, they had like seven blocks in the first 14 minutes. They are active. They're everywhere. They're long. Like Harkless and Aminu are really tough. And yet, once that game kept going on, you saw Russell Westbrook was able to get wherever he wanted. Steven Adams was able to punish Cantor, and Paul George was wide open for a lot of those shots, but he just missed them.
Yeah.
So I don't know how, and their defense, I mean, if you think I'm wrong, look at the statistics. They're 15th or 16th in defense this year in the NBA. They're not a great defense, but they are capable of being very active and getting stops when they need to. I mean, it's not like it's a garbage defense. They did enough against Oklahoma City. The question is, man, they ain't going to shoot 5 of 33 again at all. And if they do, you're winning the series. It's just, you know, will their defense be enough against some of those guys, particularly if Paul George really isn't hurt that bad? Will that be enough to win a 7-game series? I still have questions about that after watching game one.
Yeah, it's one game, right? Everyone in the NBA overreacts after one game. I think you obviously know a little bit more after game two, but I think that this is going to be a competitive and it's going to be a deep series. And I think you are right in it. I mean, I don't think it's a pipe dream. I think you have a real shot at this thing.
Well, we'll see. Game two is Tuesday?
So we got today and then you got to get to tomorrow.
Okay. In our next segment, I promised Tiger, but no, that'll be at 4. We're reading some of your texts on this coming up next. And then Tiger 4, followed by Stockwatch 415, In the News 430. We're loaded. Thank you for being with us on a Monday. This is The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, to the better of you today, text line at 55305, Blazers Thunder. Blazers up 1-0, game two Tuesday. A couple of texts here. I'm so sick of Stotts being conservative and not playing the bench. I'll give you first crack at that if you'd like.
Well, I mean,
I can take it.
It is the playoffs, and the bench gets awful short. And let's be honest, your bench isn't that good. I don't know what you. Collins played 14. Curry 16. Turner 16. Hood 22. I don't know who you want to play. Do you want more minutes for Myers Leonard?
No, here's what they're saying.
I don't understand that.
This drives me crazy. Thank you for saying that, because you're so right. The Blazers bench is, when they're in there, it is hold on and hope.
You white-knuckle that thing.
You white-knuckle it, because everybody thinks the Blazers, oh, they're so deep, they got all these guys. No, they really don't.
No.
When push comes to shove in the playoffs, the getting Cantor and Hood was huge.
Yeah.
Especially now that Nurkic is down, because Cantor and Hood are legitimate rotational guys. Evan Turner can be in the right situation, and, you know, he's hit and miss. Outside of that, boy, Zach Collins got playoffed in the worst way. I mean, he was getting lit.
Yeah. He was awful last
night. He was getting absolutely playoffed. And then Curry's nice. Curry can hit a few shots.
Yep.
And like I say, you know, he did. But outside of that, I mean, there's a reason why Van Gundy, who was doing the broadcast, Jeff Van Gundy, he said on the broadcast that Oklahoma City thinks that they should pitch a shutout when the Blazers have Curry, Turner, Hood, Leonard, and Collins on the floor. Oklahoma City's like, dude, you ain't scoring.
Outside of Curry, there's no one there that scares you. And even on the other end, this is playoff basketball. A lot of people are going to run 7-8-man rotation.
That's right.
Outside of Schroeder for Oklahoma City, no one on their bench did anything. Nerlens Noel comes in and plays a little bit. Morris and then Felton. But
I like what Noel does for them. You're right. Schroeder thinks he's like, and Schroeder's a nice player, but he's got to calm down a little bit. He went 5 of 17.
But he's really
Morris,
the only one that plays any kind of extended minutes for Oklahoma City.
When Morris and those guys are in there, I think they're gripping just as much as Blazer fans are.
Yeah.
So it's the same. This is why Stotts is not being conservative by not playing these guys. He's being prudent. It's the playoffs. Rotations shortened for this very reason. And that can be a difference in a game. I mean, you got to get those guys in there to get your starters a little rest. But at the same time, you do not overplay.
No.
I mean, maybe if like Lehman's 8 of 8 or something, but he didn't even play.
No.
So
I think the only guy you give significant minutes to, maybe it's two of them, would be Curry, because he can hit the shots.
Yes, and Hood.
Well, I was going to say Evan Turner, because he can run the offense when Lillard's on the bench.
And he can play defense. You're right. I think you've got Hood, Curry, and maybe Turner. And then Collins is going to have to play, but boy, I tell you what, they're going to chew him up if
we all talked about how he was their best defensive player inside, and he just Olayed everybody to the rim.
It was like he had a plus minus like -9 or -10 in his 12 minutes that he played or whatever.
Did you see Andre Drummond's plus minus yesterday?
No.
Worst in a playoff game ever, -45.
Yikes.
Let's see what else.
So it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. And the other interesting one too is the Oklahoma City, they don't score a lot, but Ferguson in that the Grant, the small forward they have, I forget what his first name is.
Jeremy.
Yeah. That's interesting too, because you know, as the series goes on, adjustments get made, and you saw, I think they held Portland to what, 41% shooting. It's going to be tough on Portland with those two guys, because those are tall, rangy guys that can give Lillard, McCollum, and anyone else real problems with their length. And it'll be interesting to see as the series goes on how Portland deals with that in Oklahoma City, which is what, the fourth or fifth best defensive team in the NBA, and you can see why.
A couple of other texts. They always talk about OKC's defense, but when they make the playoffs and both sides can be physical, not so great. Okay, interesting. We'll keep an eye on that. Bench guys didn't show up. Blazers aren't winning this series, scoring only 18 points. Bench needs to score 35-plus points for them to have a real chance. And that may be true.
It's possible, but the Thunder bench isn't very good either.
No, but if that's true, you're in trouble. And that's what I've been saying all year. And fans get mad. They're like, oh, we're so deep. No, you're not. You need CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard, and freaking now Enes Kanter to really step up. And they did.
Yeah, this series will not be won by the bench.
Well, if you want to flip that on its head, though, the bench didn't play well. Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu didn't score at all, basically. So if you get even some contribution in that realm in game two, then you're in a good spot.
All four games were...
But wait a minute. The three stars aren't going to be this great at the same time either. I mean, Oklahoma City's got paid pros too. They're throwing stuff at you that's going to take some of this stuff out of the game.
All four of these games in the regular season were tight, and I expect this thing to be a 6 or 7 game series where every one of these is going to be tight.
Yeah, well, I'm not even ready to go there yet, but we'll see. It just, these things change, you know, and we ebb and flow based off of one result so much.
Yeah, because it's like, all you have to go on right now.
I didn't think that was, look, you get the win, you take it, and you're really happy about it, but I didn't think there was a lot in there that showed that the Blazers are going to win the series. As a matter of fact, I thought, I was like, wow, they almost blew a 19-point lead to a team that went 5-33 from three, and... Hopefully Paul George is hurt, because you're going to need that moving forward, because that's the best player in the series.
Yeah.
So and he was awful. So you had all of that on your home court and you still almost blew it. That scares me. But at the same time, every game's different. Like you say, I mean, it's all about matchups and
adjustments.
That's right. And foul, you know, guys get in foul trouble or this and that, and it just changes. So we'll have to wait and see. Somebody asks, who's the better coach, Stotts or Donovan? And I don't even think that's close. I think it's Terry Stotts.
It's Terry Stotts. Yeah.
Yeah, Donovan, as a matter of fact, we had an Oklahoma City guy on last week who said Donovan's going to be in hot water if they lose the series. And you can see why. I mean, I think he's trying, but I think Westbrook's just a tough guy to coach.
He is. And did anyone else feel like Westbrook, it was, for a guy that's an MVP, and I get he's having an off-shooting year, but just in general, it just felt like it was a very non-aggressive opening game for Westbrook, especially with the struggles that Paul George was having.
I mean, he went after it, though. He was just driving the lane left and right.
And he knows he can get in. I mean, when he does that, God, he is so impossible to stop.
I just thought at times, I was waiting for him to go, and maybe this is good that he didn't. I kept waiting for him to put the team, kind of Lillard, right? Put the team on his back and be like, hey, I'm going to will this. And yeah, he was driving the lane, but... he shot what? I think he was 8-17.
Well, he's not a good shooter.
I just didn't feel like at any point that Westbrook really went all Russell Westbrook and just tried to will them to a win. And I expected that, especially with some of the struggles they were having offensively. And it never really happened.
I think the thing with Westbrook is he can't shoot this year. His shot is off this year. Free throws to the 3-point line, he has been bad this season. No. He can't take over like old Russell Westbrook because he can't hit a shot. He can only take over by driving the lane, which he's amazing at, but he can't do the rest. So you might not see nuclear Russell Westbrook unless he does it and goes a little bit too
well.
And maybe that's crazy. Maybe that's another advantage for Portland.
The thing, well, it's not, because Paul George is their best player, and he is smart enough. Westbrook is smart enough to know that you got to get Paul George going. And Paul George, even though he was hurt, still took what? How many shots? 25?
24 or something like that.
I mean, he still took a ton.
Yeah,
I mean,
he was 8-24, 4-15 from beyond the arc.
Westbrook knows that George is the man. Yeah. George is number one, and he's 1A. Westbrook knows that. And that's a better Russell Westbrook. And so the question becomes, if Paul George continues this way, when does Westbrook decide, you know what? Or in that huddle, Billy Donovan decides, you know what, man, we need more of you, Russ. You know, you got to make this happen because this guy's just not right. So they were a little stubborn, sticking, you know, they were looking for George and Westbrook was looking for George. And I thought that was the smart thing to do. They kept trying to get him going. And I think even as Blazer fans, you would sit there and he'd take a shot, George would, and you'd go, oh boy, here we go. And he made that one to pull within one. And you're like, oh crap, you know, because you know it's only a matter of time before the guy gets hot. So I think Westbrook, like this text says, Oklahoma City clearly is still trying to figure out 1 and 1A for the series. Both guys were the one for different stretches of the regular season, and both were tentative last night. I think Russ goes off in game two. That's from Ian the Burbs. Maybe, but I actually think they're gonna go right back to George and perhaps George finds a stroke.
And then Westbrook will go to the press conference and say next question again. He's becoming easier and easier to dislike by the moment.
Well, that apparently is only with one reporter. It's a guy that he hates who I guess had said something to him. So anytime he asks a question, he just says, next question.
Next question.
He refuses to answer a question from that guy.
Couple of other texts. Next question. Thunder had a cute little run this season and gave people a false reality of what they are. Maybe. I think, and I may be guilty of this too, you fall in love with them because they have Paul George and Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
And you just know how good those guys are. So, yeah, I mean, they showed their flaws for sure last night.
You can't shoot like that and win an NBA playoff series. You just can't.
Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, 5 of 33 from three. So they're not going to continue to shoot like that. But at the same time,
Blazers only shot 41%.
That's right. They're not a great shooting team. It may just be a muck it up, like really physical, get to the series. Free throw line type of game. All right. That is it for this segment. Let's get to Tiger Woods. Masters Sunday was epic. Birdie. Tiger Woods is amazing.
It was vintage. First time he's ever come back on a Sunday.
It is 3:58 on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.